We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Jack Ramsey's Danny Meringue, Brandon Sprigg. It's a Tuesday. God, I always do this. What day is it? Yeah, it's a Tuesday.
Tuesday.
You would think after doing a radio show, I'd remember, but the days don't they blend together. That's how this works.
They do.
Danny Meringue, Brandon Sprigg, a Blue Wire podcast. Jack Ramsey's brought to you by Move Insoles. It has been a little while, not because there weren't things to talk about, not because I didn't want to do this, but because I was beat up and on a lot of drugs and I wanted and needed to take a break. Sorry about that. As you can see, the content on the Patreon channel is now fully back to flowing, and we are back here. We will be bringing that sweet, sweet content as we get underway into the holiday season. I'll even make sure that we keep things going here for the foreseeable future through the holidays. So there you go. Brandon, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm doing good, Danny. I think we're at a point now. What is this? Year three, right? Year three of the pod? Yes.
Yeah.
Year three.
Yeah.
Crazy to say that out loud.
Wow.
I know. We're old.
Kind of wild.
I think year three, I don't think you really need to explain anything anymore. I think everybody listens to the podcast is aware that physically you're 88 years old and that if we're just off for like a week and a half, it's because your body's broken down and you're high on drugs trying to heal up. And it's good to be back. There's a lot to talk about tonight, but I don't think you need to. Yeah, see, there you go. I don't think you need to tee people up with what happened in the last week and a half or so.
May cause dizziness. Huh. Who knew?
Yeah. Start those right now. Let's get it going.
It's not a bad idea. Everything hurts. Look, I'm even festive. My wife would kill me if I didn't show this off.
Is that your doo-wop wreath?
It's not. It's my wife wreath.
Oh, I like that.
Those are little basketballs in there.
Yeah, little b-balls in there. Yeah, I like that little bow at the top.
There you go. Yeah, so she made that.
I just have this beautiful white wall to
is
make
it white
my
or is
whiteness.
Is it taupe?
Well, see, here's the thing. It's actually more of like a cream color, and I painted this wall a cream color to make my teeth look white because they're actually not. So,
oh.
Like, it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I like that.
Huh?
My teeth just get like washed out by this insanely bright light that's in front of me.
Well, I do a gambling show every Sunday night, and my co-host...
You have to look like you're physically able and willing to steal their money with that smile?
I do, because she fake tans, and she has, like, perfectly white teeth.
Oh,
and
no way!
I'm not tan, and my teeth aren't as white.
That is actually the recipe for gambling shows, is to have a attractive woman who is tan with pearly whites and an ugly white man next to her to make them look even better.
It's really awkward when guys randomly tweet her, but my name's attached in the tweet, and I get tweets. It's like, you look so gorgeous, and I want to respond, thank you.
See, that's the difference between you and I. I would.
Well, I did
well,
one time.
It's this new skincare routine that I'm doing. That's what it is.
Thank you. I've been moisturizing. I want to actually start with something that's non-Blazer real quick. We'll get into the Blazer stuff. I just wanted to get your thoughts. What did you think of the IST year one, the in-season tournament?
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of wanted to pick your brain on that real quick. The Lakers win it against the Pacers. Halliburton, a great story through that thing. But it ended up being a pretty competitive. I know the Pacers didn't play a great game in the final, but it ended up being pretty competitive throughout. What did you think of it?
I thought it served its purpose. The NBA looked at it as a sunk cost that they knew where they weren't going to get a ton out of right out of the gate. But it appears that the overall numbers, 26 to 27%, that's the increase in viewership. I think that they knew that's about what they were shooting for in year one, and that's what you have kind of to look forward to build upon. And then it's about, can you get people to watch more in streaming? Can you get people more to watch on other platforms? But overall, year over year, they were up over 25%. I think it's the thing that matters most is that you're getting A, more viewership, B, you're getting viewership that matters before Christmas. And the big part of that package beyond that is getting Tyrese Halliburton his second bleeping game on national TV.
Isn't that unreal?
No, it's not. Because this is what this league has done. And they've been so stupid about it. Mm-hmm. They want to market Boston and New York and L.A. Ah! Remind me again, where was LeBron James successful at for the first 9 years of his career?
Mm-hmm.
That international metropolis that is Cleveland?
Right.
John Morant, Memphis.
Shea.
OKC. Halliburton. Indianapolis. Dame was one of the most marketable players on the entire planet in a geographical outpost in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Giannis in Milwaukee. Like, we don't need to put the Lakers on TV 46 times anymore.
I know.
It's just so dumb.
It's ridiculous to me, too. You're hitting on something right up my alley because, like, we both really like the NBA. Like, outside of the Blazers, we love watching NBA basketball.
Oh, I will watch Halliburton every single time he's on TV, man. He is so fun.
But what's wild to me is, like, they're not following the recipe. The NFL.
They show you what it is. They will show you the recipe.
Well, yeah, but like they'll give me two backup quarterbacks and not give a crap, and I'll go, okay, I'm watching. Like you put it on television, we'll watch. It's insane to me.
Yeah, I don't understand it. So they continue to pump like tonight's Lakers Mavericks and then you know Warriors Suns, and it's like put more
Same
Kings
four
on,
teams. Yes.
Put the Cavs on,
right?
Put the Nuggets, they're your reigning champions on.
Yeah.
So I just.
I will admit
I'm old man shaking my fist at the cloud right now. That is the NBA.
No. That's not an old man take you have. That's a pretty, I think, logical take for people our age and even younger that are like, yo, we like basketball. Give us other basketball. Don't just give us the same five teams. I will admit though, I kind of trashed this idea last year going into it. Ended up really liking it. I was jealous. I can't believe I'm saying this. Not that it matters. Nobody's going to remember who wins all the IST tournaments, but, and I hate the semis being in Vegas. I hate the colored courts. I get why they did it, but I don't like it. I was genuinely jealous. I think I want the Blazers to be in the IST conversation next year.
I think it's a good way to kind of put all that together is to kind of take that step. And I think, honestly, it was helpful for the Pacers to kind of move their way up, not only to get that exposure, but to get that ratchet up kind of feeling. You know, they beat the Celtics. They beat the Bucks on their way through things. Those are steps to take in building a team. They're a player away from being truly competitive. Halliburton, and this is the craziest thing, is he's a top five, top seven player in the league.
Oh, like, Danny, he's got to be in the MVP conversation squarely.
He genuinely does. And I know people are like, oh, he's not. Yes, he is. Literally every metric, he is. He's the most efficient scorer in the NBA right now. Last I checked, his effective field goal percentage is like almost 64%. He has the highest assist ratio in the entire NBA. Like, not only does his team count on him, he also has the best assist to turnover ratio for all of the volume guys. Like, no matter what efficiency stat you look at, he's number one, and he's doing it at insane volume. He's not. Yeah. It's not like he's like getting four assists and zero turnovers. He's getting 15 assists in a game and zero turnovers. Oh, and by the way, they're playing at the fastest pace in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Like the math isn't mathing around the guy, and he's taking a team that is missing another star player. Miles Turner's a nice player. Obi Toppin's a totally fine role player. Neesmith is a totally fine role player. Ben Mathurin.
Heald's fine.
Buddy Heald, yeah. Like, it's all role players. It's like varying mm-hmm. levels of like pick a role player that fits your scheme for the night, which is why they've been like pretty successful, is they can kind of mix and match some things. But Tyrese Halliburton is the thing that makes everything work.
Yeah.
If they get a, I know it's like if they, but if they had like a Jaylen Brown kind of player there, they'd be a monster.
What about OG? There's a rumor about OG. Raptors are terrible this year.
They are, and I like the fit. They need somebody else, I think, with a little more wiggle.
Okay.
Because OG, but that's also part of it, is OG, wherever he goes, that's what he wants to do. That's part of his issue in Toronto, is he feels like he's just been kind boxed into like, you're the 3-and-D guy, and you don't really get to dribble. Now, right. I don't know if he necessarily has that to his game, but adding a defensive stopper who's a legitimate all-defensive player, like a first-team all-defense stopper, would be a massive thing for them, even if it wasn't like the perfect fit. So
yeah.
If they did that, I'd be okay with it. Because I don't, they're clearly too good now to suck, like to go like add through the lottery kind of deal. Like, unless what happened last year, which is Halliburton and Turner, or Halliburton getting hurt and Turner kind of getting turned off. They got Jairus Walker in the draft, and he's just not ready.
Yeah.
But if he does find something here in a year or two, and then you add OG to it, now maybe you're cooking with something. It's going to be interesting to see what they've got.
Yeah, it's something that I'm definitely following. Like I said it on the radio show, I have teams in every sport that just you'll say a random team, and I'll tell you if I like when they're good. Like, I randomly, for no reason, will say, I like when the Minnesota Vikings are good in the NFL. The Indiana Pacers, absolutely one of those for me. I grew up with the Pacers being relevant. Reggie Miller was in my life. I like when the Pacers are good, and they care about basketball in that state. So, this isn't the Caitlin Cooper podcast. This is the Jack Ramsey's podcast. I think we've talked enough Indiana Pacers basketball here. Shout out our homie, Caitlin Cooper.
She is going to come on, though. She had some stuff pop up, so she's going to come on and talk the development of Tyrese and kind of like what she's seen and some parallels for watching young players grow.
I can't wait to talk with her. She's probably one of the more knowledgeable people, I think, covering the entire sport.
She's brilliant. It is what it is.
Let's talk a little bit, a couple games. Let's talk about the return of one Anfernee Simons. I think we've all been awaiting this because he unfortunately got hurt, so he missed a few weeks.
At half
makes
time.
The return. What?
Going into the half of game one.
It's ridiculous.
Remember, he got dumb hot. I think he was 6 for 6 in the second quarter. It was like, oh, there he is. And then he missed literally everything the rest of the game because he tore the ligaments in his thumb. He continued to play with a torn thumb, and it was like, this isn't working.
Well, he finally comes back, and in the three games back, Danny, he's averaging 32-5 on 44% from three. Obviously, another big game last night in L.A., and what ended up being a pretty close contest versus the Clippers. We see pretty quickly what it means for some of the other guys to have a guy like Ant back, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, look, everybody knows where I stand with Ant. And it's not like I knew he was going to be a guy who could be an offensive engine. I always said from the jump, I know two things about him. I know he's got an incredible shot, and I know he can get it off against anybody. If you don't believe me, you can go back and check the tape in the draft. I was on the stage with Dwight and Jason and everybody else, you know, going over the immediate picks between him and Gary Trent Jr. And everybody kind of looked at me like, you watched IMG tape of this scrawny kid?
Nobody believed you, by the way, in that moment. Like, yeah, you didn't watch IMG tape.
And I did, because I'm a sicko. But Shaden is the guy who's benefiting the most from Ant coming back, because he's now in a spot that makes sense for him. Okay, you can take a look at all of the numbers, whether it's the Second Spectrum stuff from NBA.com or straight from Second Spectrum itself. You take a look at where Shaden worked in the pick and roll. If I sort things, basically, like if you take a look, like coming in tonight, Luka had already run 960 pick and rolls, right? That's a lot. For comparison's sake, Shaden is at 376. Okay. About a third.
That's insane.
But he had high volume when everybody went down, and he was running things. Okay. So Luka, for the bar here, is averaging 1.07 points per possession in the pick and roll, which is very good, particularly mm-hmm. at that volume. Like, that's crazy. The only players worse than Shaden, Keontae George, Eric Gordon, Talen Horton Tucker, Russell Westbrook, Scoot Henderson, Jeremy Sochan, Shake Milton.
Mm.
So basically what I'm saying is that's not Shea's game. And ask him to do that is he's not ready to do that. He's not supposed to be that. So moving Shea off ball, allowing him to be more comfortable coming off pin downs, coming off back screens, coming off zipper cuts, UCLA action, like whatever you want to do. Hell, I saw the Blazers run floppy the other night, and I almost crapped a brick. It's the first time I've seen them run floppy in probably 6 years. It's allowed him to be in a much more familiar spot and pick and choose kind of when he wants to put his foot down, which is kind of like the next development stage for him of like, he needs to have his foot mostly down all the time. He can back off a little bit, but then it needs to really come down later on in games. And that's kind of that's the next step both for him and for Anthony. Like, I saw some people like, Anthony was a ball hog last night in the game. And it's like, if you go back and watch the tape, you can see Anthony Simons or Shaden Sharp get off the ball three separate times in the final minutes because he didn't want it. And it's not because he's scared. He's just not ready. And he's looking at Ant, who at this point in time has, 32 on, 18 shots.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, probably going to go stick with him. Why? Because he's breaking and bending defenses and allowing things to happen. And so that's the kind of the spot that Shaden is fitting into just so much better.
Danny, can I ask you something? You highlighted there him playing without these guys who obviously they're still going through injuries. You didn't have Brogdon, Grant, or DA last night. They've been banged up. It's been a bit of a mash unit. But when you mentioned playing off ball with Ant versus what he is with the ball, I mean, I don't know about the whole ball hogging thing. I didn't see that when I watched the game. That wasn't kind of my takeaway. I thought I saw actually a pretty high-level scorer getting to his spots and getting shots that he liked, that he wanted. I also saw a guy giving the ball in grenade spots, 5 seconds or less on the shot clock. Here you go, Ant, save us. He had one on the kind of fading towards the baseline, pulling up on the left that he ended up hitting. And it's just like, that was a hell of a save. He got that ball with 4 seconds on the shot clock and made something out of nothing.
You're talking about the DHO early in the fourth quarter.
Yes.
Reith came up on the reset and was like, save us, Ant. And he grabs it, drags down the sideline, hits a leaning, running 18-foot fadeaway pull-up over James Harden as the shot clock expires. And then he just trots back on defense like it's nothing.
Well, I wanted to ask you how, like, at this point of Shaden's career, because he's still so young, how can I phrase this? The growth of running off ball with a high-level scorer versus being forced once in a while to be the guy on ball because injuries suddenly occur. Like, I'm not suggesting that he can ever be a creator or go get his own look.
Sure.
But merely, I thought he looked really good off ball with Ant.
Oh, God, yes. Because, I think it allows him to, work his way in to find his spots so he doesn't have to work as hard for shots. The flip side of that is Ant has to find his, he has to perhaps work harder.
It's because, more on him, right?
Yes, yeah. But that's the thing. He's in a spot where he's more and more and more comfortable in doing that. Like, I think the biggest problem, Brandon, with if you're a Blazers fan, is you just watched Damian Lillard take on double teams regularly and eviscerate them for a decade. So you think that's normal.
Right.
That's not normal behavior. That's top 10 player in the NBA. Like, those are the only guys who do that. Because, number one, outside of that group, nobody gets that respect. Which is, again, this is why I keep trying to tell everybody, teams are terrified of Anthony Simons. There's a reason why Ty Lue is going, we're going to send two at you. Norman Powell played him at 40 feet away and made the rest of the Blazers play 4-on-4 during that game. They're like, you're not getting this back.
Mm-hmm.
he will willingly take on a double team and then play 4-on-3, kick the ball out, stretch the defense out, string them out, find that, let them play. But he will also take on the double team and attack it and put them even under more pressure. And in doing so, it opens up things for everybody else. How different does that look with DA and JG on the floor?
Right.
And that's going to be the question kind of going forward is, you know, how does that look in, with that next group? Is how likely are they to win the game against Utah fully healthy? Pretty likely. How likely are they to win the game last night?
I think they probably could have done it.
How likely are they to beat the Warriors the other day?
I mean, yeah, probably trounce them, not just blow a lead.
And I think you can say that about a lot of the games. I'm not saying this to say that they just be this great team. I'm just saying there's a pretty solid chance that they're winning some more games. I still don't think they're going to break the over because I think that come trade deadline, you're going to see one more turn into the skid because they need to make sure that they have as many assets as they can going forward. But beyond that, you're seeing how good Shaden can be. You're seeing how good Ant can be. Let's see what it looks like when you've got some more things out there. Because, look, one of the things last night in that game is, as great as Ant was, the next step for him is watching him learn how to score and be more efficient in the fourth quarter after doing what he did for three quarters. Because right now, he doesn't understand the pacing. So that he has enough gas in the fourth quarter to be able to find those spots.
To finish, to close those games out.
Because he has to do so much in the first three quarters.
Right, leading into it, yeah.
And I think you could see last night, the legs weren't quite there. And I've seen the pushback of, well, why aren't they giving it to Shaden? Because Shaden is not a primary initiator. And asking him to initiate against Kawhi bleeping Leonard or PG is asinine. You're not setting him up for success. If you want to say, well, maybe they should run some stuff for Shaden off ball, I wouldn't argue. But I also think that there's been opportunities for that this season that Shaden has turned down. So if Shaden himself is deferring to Ant in that moment, I think you let kind of Ant do what he does and you live with what happens there.
Well, how much of the legs too? I think this is the interesting part. And maybe, I don't know if you've talked to Ant recently, but I think the interesting thing to me with Ant and watching him is not only the aggressiveness in the first three quarters, not that he wasn't aggressive at all in the fourth, but more just pointing out the first three quarters, the aggressiveness and the ability to get to the line. He's averaging, and look, it's a small, tiny sample size, but we talked about this. You date this podcast back a couple years ago.
This is the thing we wanted to see.
Out of CJ. We brought this up with CJ. CJ was an elite scorer, but he's a middie who didn't get to the line. He wasn't going into the paint and drawing fouls very often. And Ant, up until last night and last few games, largely hasn't been a big free throw attempts guy. It's one, it's two, it's two, it's two. And now, again, small sample size. He's at six. He shot 13 last night. Him and Shaden combined for 22. I think that's the other thing I was wondering was, is he gassed and winded? He was more aggressive and got to the line more than he has in a long time, if ever. Plus, he's returning from injury, and there's always going to be some in-game conditioning happening with these guys, even though they're professional athletes.
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing, is that Ant has found ways to get to the free throw line now. And you saw him in the Golden State game. He was visibly frustrated. Ant's not a guy who complains. Like, I know people say that, oh, the player X is... Ant just doesn't really talk much. That's kind of how he is, and the fact that he is talking a little bit more is a mark of growth for him. But even more than that, like, if you see him bitching about a call, he got hit.
Yeah.
Like, it's throw it out the window. The dude got hit. You know, it's that. That's just, it is what it is. But he's also, the part of that is going to the rim, and this is what CJ knew. You get beat up, and it can wear you down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things where there's a little bit of a trade-off there. So he's got to figure out exactly when and where and how he's going to go to those spots. And that's, again, we were so spoiled from watching Dame do it for basically 7 years at an elite level that we forget of what the growth looks like. Like, if you look right now, Ant's numbers, again, it's only four games, are well ahead of Dame's numbers at age 24. Like, I think you have to look at this and go, does Ant have another gear? You have to look at this and understand that this season isn't just about Scoot and Shaden.
No.
That it is very much the one who might be most important this year and going into next year is Anfernee Simons.
He has completely shifted my view on the season, to be honest with you.
How so?
The way I kind of look, I imagined they'd be a 6-16 team.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think it would look like this, which is I want to get to a part of that, but just in watching it, like how many of these games, I know they've had some games, a couple stinkers here or there, but like they were down 19 to Dallas. They cut within that. They got back with one in the fourth quarter. Like when Ant is operating at an elite level efficiently, it makes me, it brings bigger questions to my head, whereas like going into the year, I thought they were going to be a trash ass team that wasn't going to compete on a nightly basis, was going to largely get their teeth kicked in, and they were going to take their rookie lumps with Scoot and what he was going to be. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how the balance of Scoot minutes, and look, I didn't see injuries coming, but like the Scoot minutes and Ant minutes and Shaden minutes, I knew they were going to have to figure that out some way, but I didn't have a viewpoint of Ant. I viewed Ant as more of a really good player who's kind of on the outside of the situation, not his fault. And it shifted the kind of way I view the team now in some ways. And I'm kind of curious to see what I think about this
mm-hmm.
when February's here, when March is here. And you're talking about probably not a very good team record-wise, but maybe a team still playing hard for their coach and still giving effort night in and night out. Anfernee Simons has made me recalibrate the way I'm viewing and thinking about this team's future.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing is, I get a lot of, oh, we're going to go down the Dame CJ path. I don't think they are, because I think they're going to make a decision. And let's not get it twisted. You have to make a decision on Ant or Scoot within the next 2 years.
I think a year and a half is kind of the timeline in my head.
A year and a half, 2 years. But that's such an eternity in the NBA. Because the question you have to ask yourself, as good as Scoot is profiles to be, if Ant turns into, like, I've heard other players compare him to Devin Booker. Do not get it twisted. That's not what I'm saying. But I've had other high-level players compare him to Devin Booker. Like, I've heard other coaches talk about him and how terrified they are of him offensively because he is one of the five best shooters in the entire league. And so there's this guy who can do a ton off the bounce at all three levels. And if all of a sudden he starts being able to pass better on the move, and he is consistently getting to the line, and he's passable defensively, and you start looking mm-hmm. around, you're like, this guy's averaging 27-6-4 on 45-40-90 splits. And you're like, guys, I think we found the thing we were looking for.
Yeah, that's not something you're just willy-nilly like, all right, let's trade him now and cash in on some draft capital. Yeah, like, that's not like, something easily done.
No, and that's the thing is like, the thing that you want from that offensive hub, and this is the thing the Celtics would kill to have. Like, and I'm not saying Ant is better than Jaylen or Jason, but they don't have that kind of fear at all three levels because those guys just want to kind of sit there and dance, and they're not the level of terrifying shooter to game plans that Ant can be, that Dame can be. Like, the guy that you've seen, this isn't even theory. We've seen Ant hit 6 threes, 7 threes in a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen him score 20 in a quarter. What? A half dozen times? Stuff that most guys in the league literally never do. And we've mm-hmm. seen him do it. If you look over the last 3 years, it's him and Steph Curry for the most games with guys that have hit 9 or more threes. It's those two. That's it.
Yeah.
If you look since Ant, this is, it's again, this is small sample size theater. It just kind of makes me raise my eyebrow of like, huh, I wonder if this is anything indicative or it's a little bit of a high spell before things settle in, is that since Ant has come back, two players have hit more threes, Steph Curry and Bojan Bogdanovic, hilariously. Five players have hit more free throws. If you're drilling the second, third most threes, and your top 10 in free throws generated and knocked down, like, that's an offensive hub, man. Like, I don't know. Yeah, like, that's... And again, it's only been three games, and I'm not going crazy with it, but, like, these are the markers that I'm watching of, like, because everybody told me that, no, he's taking that leap. Like, you should see him. He's taking a leap, like, beyond what you think he's taking.
The crazy thing is you're talking about small sample size theater, and sure, that might be true. But, like, dude, you could rattle off right now, because I think you have the tab up, Anfernee Simons' three-point percentage. You could rattle off what? The runs, these mini runs he goes on randomly, like the game where he beats Milwaukee and then Memphis at Memphis. And it's like, oh, that's a different level. Like, when you see it happen, you recognize it because you see it so very few times that when it does happen, you're like, oh, that's a little different. That's not everyday point guard stuff, right? Like, we'll get to Scoot here in a minute, but, like, Scoot had a great game last night.
He did. And again, I'm saying all this not to, like, say that they've made the decision.
I know.
We're just where we are right now with Ant. Yes.
But my point is, like, I'm a gambling man. If you allow me the opportunity to bet under on percentages and point totals for the Utah game on Friday, I'm probably betting the under on Scoots. Whereas, like, I don't have that same thought and feel on Ant. Now, I know Scoot's 19. What was Ant at 19? I get those are very different things, but we
Scoot is way ahead of where Ant was at 19.
From a physical standpoint, absolutely.
Yeah.
But, like, there's also elements too that I think you see, like, shooting is going to be difficult, right? He's going to have to prove a lot of people wrong, because his percentage probably is going to be very strong. So I just think there are tells with Ant that, yeah, the sample size isn't large, but when you've seen it at an elite level, you recognize it, and it's okay to call that out. And I think that's what we're hitting on right now.
No, and that's what makes all this so interesting, in the fact of, you know, they are losing games. And I want it to be clear for folks, like, I'm not trying to rah-rah either Ant or any of these guys, but I told all of you at the beginning of this process of this teardown, I'm not hunting for the negative.
We don't need to talk about wins and losses.
That's what I mean. Like, but I'm saying, like, I've seen some people like, oh, you just don't want to talk about. You're right. I don't. Because there's so much I can sit there and shred apart, and they're losing so many games. I don't want to live in that. Talk about the
say
good.
Say some positive shit.
Yeah, talk about the good. And that's because that's what I'm trying to find this year, because this year is, do not get it twisted. Stop trying to say this team's going to make a play-in. They're going to make a push at the end of the season. This is unequivocally a developmental year.
Not a good team, yeah.
They are 6-16. They are, folks, ladies and gentlemen.
Fourth-worst team.
Thank you.
Look, the fourth-worst team.
It's felt close, but if you look at all the metrics, all the projections based on what they've done, even with these close games, profile as, let's go ahead and update today's league summary. They profile as, per cleaning the glass, a 23.8 win team.
Yep.
That, ladies and gentlemen, would be the under.
The under.
4.5 games, in fact.
Yeah.
And you could say, yeah, they've had injuries. Maybe some things will go their way. Maybe they'll make up four games. They're still under. But that's the point.
That's the season, like, guys. Yes. That's how basketball goes sometimes.
And that's okay. That's okay.
These
are the markers that we should be looking at and going, okay. Now, next year, when you have some data to work with on guys.
Yeah.
On Ant, on Scoot, on Jabari. Mm-hmm. Then you have, on Shaden, then you can just kind of going from there.
I wanted to I'm trying to do a consistent segment on the pod called X's and No's. I know you do the Patreon where you kind of dive into things in every game and you give thoughts on players and evaluations. I want to kind of stick. This is in the positive realm because, again, like, I don't want to do a podcast for an hour and just talk about depressing crap that, like, we all know. I want to talk about the good here because we've seen this team be competitive with some good teams. We've seen this team damn near beat teams that going into the year, I don't think we thought they would beat. And I know some team like Minnesota being the one seed is a surprise for people. Whereas like the Warriors being what they are is also a surprise. Mm-hmm. But when you see them come back within one against Dallas or come back and leading against the Clippers very briefly, and then ultimately losing in the fourth quarter, I thought Haberstroh, for example, had a great stat on the broadcast last night where he pointed out just how much full court pressures they apply and how that comps to previous years. What's real about their style of play?
The intensity. I say this with the utmost praise and joy imaginable. Two is a giant asshole. And I mean that, like, I could not give higher praise.
He seems like one.
And he's not that as a human. It's on the floor. The man is a terrorist.
The competitive stuff. Yeah.
So I've talked to probably about a dozen opponents now about, what they've seen from Scoot, what they've seen from Ant, what they've seen from Two. Just trying to get a feel on guys. Every single guard that has been picked up by Two is like, that dude is a mother bleeper.
Yeah.
Like every single one of them has been like, I hated it. He's just on me and on me and on me. They're like, he's relentless. It's like, it's not fake. And he goes, he talks cash shit too the whole time. And I'm just sitting there going, good, good, good. Like, I'm sitting here loving this. And it's so funny because he was like, I don't really talk that much. And I'm like, somebody's lying.
Why would the opponent lie about that too? It's a random dumb thing to lie about, man.
He says like, well, if they start talking, I'm not gonna let them not talk.
Oh God.
So it's like it's that, which is fine. Yeah. But he does this in practice. Like I've talked to guys, like he's like this in practice. He doesn't let
good.
Up.
Good.
So like that's real, and I genuinely think that is something that is infectious. Like.
Is that Chauncey thing, or you think this is like two? Like two bringing?
I think it's both. I think Chauncey kind of embodies that, and Two has that.
You know, like I know you know this, but saying what you're saying out loud, like to hear that the second round guy that they just traded for this summer as a rookie
is the best defensive wing they've had since Nick Batum,
and is maybe resetting the intensity of the franchise. Like, that's some wild stuff to be saying out loud, and I don't think you're saying that lightly.
No.
And that is a hell of a compliment to a young player.
Yeah. No, he gets it. He knows this is how he's going to play in the NBA. This is how he gets on the floor.
God bless this kid.
And look, he's not immune to making a mistake or two. He makes them regularly, but...
He had 20 shots in a game. We know he makes mistakes.
Okay? Hey, look, I talked to him after practice, and he was like, Chauncey told me maybe a little too much. Maybe a little too much. Like, Two gets it. He had a little smile on his face.
I would pay money.
Somebody asked him if he's ever going to take that many shots again. He's like, you never know. Like,
he shot like six times last night. I would pay money to watch Chauncey bring him in.
That
to
conversation.
Talk about the 20 shots. Yes.
20's too much. I mean, it is what it is. But you know what, man? Somebody had to take some shots. Look, there's some Wes Matthews in him. Of like, oh, you're not gonna take the shot.
Yeah.
So, I will
give it to me.
And they're like, I like that confidence of like, you're not gonna do it. Somebody has to.
Right.
Might as well be me.
Mm-hmm.
There's an inherent level of confidence there that's real, and I think that emanates from him as part of who he is. And look, we'll talk about Scoot here in a minute. Scoot. Is a defensive competitor, man. He'll get on the floor and immediately pick up all 94. Like he's just whoop. He's a foot off the line. Just let's go.
Yep.
Let's go. And you know he'll pick up a dumb foul here or there, but he'll compete. You know he had that rip on the fast break by James Harden last night, where he rips it away and then Harden kind of poked it back out off him. He let it go and got the steal, stopped the transition, got the turnover. It's like. Mm-hmm. So you see this competitive. You saw Ant fighting with Kawhi. Look, Kawhi Leonard is going to Kawhi Leonard. There's nobody last night that was going to stop him. But you see Ant fighting with Kawhi Leonard for position, trying to deny Kawhi, you know, backing him up and throwing him back. You see WAP, 27-year-old rookie, out there competing. You know, Jabari, his engine's always running high. Like, you look at this team, Shaden, even though he just looks like he just, you know, woke out of, you know, got out of bed and's got a drug rug on, he plays with some intensity, man.
He does. Yeah.
Like, it does it wane every now and then defensively? Yeah, he's a second-year player. But this team hasn't lacked intensity. They've come out of the gate maybe a little crappy. Utah, Cleveland, Dallas at home.
Yeah, Dallas at home. Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, they get their ass chewed at halftime, and Buddy Chauncey's done it a few times. They come out with a renewed focus, and they're like, well, why didn't they come out with a focus in the beginning? Well, number one, they've been missing half their freaking roster most of the season. Number two, they're a young team. They don't know what it takes. And not having Brog, JG, and DA out there is huge, because those guys are your tone setters. So it's become incumbent on Ant, who's learning how to do that.
You know, it's an underrated thing to say, and I know it may not make sense to some people, given their record, but when you watch them, with or without the vets, and obviously having Ant back is huge, so there's a smaller sample size there, but like, it just feels like a team that likes each other. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like a team that gets up for one another for the most part. Like, when two makes a good play, they're standing up.
Yeah, that's the thing that they're working on. So, because the trade with Dame was so late, these guys didn't get their August runs in and their late September runs. I mean, the Dame trade was, what, September 28th?
About that, yeah.
I think it was the 28th or 29th. Like, so camp's going. Because for those that don't know, usually guys come in, probably half the team, especially the back end and the young guys, they're in late August. Labor Day hits, everyone's in the gym. And it's the unofficial start of camp. Coaches can't be there, but they're running. They're getting in shape. They're getting their timing. They're getting to know each other. They'll work some stuff out. That's why Chauncey brought them all down to Santa Barbara again. It was kind of get them to bond. But they really weren't bonding yet because it was still so many new parts. And then Ant gets hurt. Then Time Lord gets hurt. Then Brog gets hurt. And Scoot's struggling. And then Scoot gets hurt. And it's just this jumbled mess. And nobody's really right. And so they're still figuring out their timing. And in that process, they're figuring each other out. One of the fun things about being in the locker room is that you know who are really good friends now, or appear to be good friends, are Jeremy and Matisse. And I can hear you hear their conversations, and it's like, oh, this is a different connection that maybe you didn't expect. Ibu Baji just came back to the team, two weeks ago now. They love Baji. Like, the whole room, like, he walks in there, like, Baji's always smiling, and he just brings that energy. Skylar Mays, maybe the nicest guy in the NBA. And like, legitimately, just the salt of the earth human being that you just can't help but root for.
Right.
And so, like, they're getting to know each other, and that bonding and liking each other. If you're a superstar team, and I'm talking superstar team that has like the ability to win no matter what, you can get by not liking each other. If you're all pros, it just won't last. You get one, maybe 2 years out of it before. Golden State.
Mm-hmm.
They had the KD had to go. Like, everybody just had enough of it, everybody's shit. There's too many egos in the room. It just was not going to keep working. You know, somebody was going to get punched in the face. Ultimately, that somebody, Jordan Poole. But you just try to figure this stuff out, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't on a chemistry level, because that's what GMs do. Because it's not just the how good are they on the court. The off the court stuff matters. And like, if you've got guys that their vibes aren't right, they can tear a locker room apart. And with this group, I think for the most part, everybody's vibes are coming correct. And you're seeing them come together, and you're seeing that translate the four. And I think this is an easy segue into Scoot. Have you noticed how much Scoot's a rah-rah guy?
Oh, you know what's funny is I've noticed Scoot is such a rah-rah guy that there was a play when Shaden made it. Scoot was on the bench, Shade made the play, mm-hmm. and Scoot came off the bench and flexed on the court at mm-hmm. the crowd as if he was the guy making the play.
That was the Shade and step back at yes. St. Daniel Tice into the Shadow Realm.
He's not just a rah-rah guy.
If you watch the replay and just look at the top left corner, you can just see Scoot lose his mind.
He reacts as if he's the one making mm-hmm. the play. I've absolutely noticed it. It's he's on the court when he's celebrating. It's crazy. And he finally had a great game. He shot 50% from the field. He had 3 of 4 threes, career high 19 points. He dished out 6 dimes. You mentioned what he was doing on defense. Like, that was his best game as a pro. I was really happy for him. No matter what mm-hmm. the opinions are, I'm not rooting against anybody. I was really happy to watch Scoot have that game because, you know what? That game means something to him. It's not the game. It's the opponent. He looked up to Russ growing up.
I mean,
and yeah. Russ busted his ass in that first game.
Kind of humiliated him.
He did, and I think he noted that, and yeah. he played a really good game. I know we agree on his jump shot mechanics and how but like he had a great game last night, so we need to recognize that.
No, and I think the ball going in, shout out to Mike Richmond, I think he called it BGI, ball go in. I noted it last night on Twitter, on live. Like, yes, the shots going in make everything look better. It's always going to make everything look better. That's just going to be it. But I also think that Scoot has pulled the reins back. Like, a couple of the opponents that I talked to said that Scoot was out there playing without a plan, which makes sense.
That's a good way of putting it, yeah.
Like, he doesn't know what he wants to do, how he wants to do it, and how he's going to get there. Like, Dame was always a guy of, like, I'm going to set this guy up, and I'm going to do dit. If he does this, I'm going to do this. If he does this, I'm going to do this. If they take this away, I'm going to do this. Those were all built up. D told me that was, I think it was year 4. Year 4. Let that sink in. Year 4 of the 4-year college guy said it was around year 4 that things started to slow down and he knew what teams wanted to do and how he wanted to attack it on a nightly basis. Scoot is like scratching the surface of like, I could get to that mid-range pull-up here. I can take this guy off the bounce. If I'm in the open court, I can push it out and try to really put pressure here. He is no longer playing at breakneck pace and like the tears rolling back out of his eye because, you know, he's got to squint to see through things because he's moving too quick.
Yeah.
He's still playing fast. Still getting into stuff, but he's limiting just how much he's forcing things.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That's what's been different the last couple games.
The pressing doesn't feel, you know, he's not driving to the cup, and it feels like, oh, what am I doing? Like, it didn't seem like he had that last night, the way that he has in so many of the other games.
No, and I think that's the big part of it is, I don't think the game's slowing down. I don't think he's maturing. I think you're just seeing just a smidgen of growth. And that's what this is supposed to be. And this is why I continue to want him to come off the bench. Like, barring something massive changing, I think Scoot should finish the year out of the bench.
I think that would be a really good place for him.
Because that's a place where, by the end of the year, what I hope to see is that he's able to dictate something to a defense. I'm going to get to this mid-range pull-up, whether you want me to or not. You're trying to take this away? No. I've got to move and a counter move to get there. Nothing you can do about it. I'm going to get there. Or, oh, I got a switch? I got a big on me? Oh, he's playing drop heavy on me? Cool. I'm still going to attack your chest and attack your hips and play tight to you and not round out my drives.
Yeah.
So that I can keep pressure on you and collapse the defense and then find a pass. Like, I want to find, and it doesn't need to be perfect, I just want him to see something, recognize it, have a plan. I don't care if it's a crappy plan. Have a plan. Cobble together with popsicle sticks, tape, and Elmer's glue, a plan. I'm not asking for Ocean's 11.
Danny, it felt like there was a possession, and it was either the second or third quarter, but there was a possession where he was out on the break, dribbling up, and it just, I don't know, the way it felt and looked, it looked exactly what you're talking about, the plan. It just, he looked like he locked in. He knew what he was doing, and he wasn't going to hesitate or second guess it. And he hits a little floater. And I'm just like, yes, yes. That right there in those moments, and he had a few of those last night because he did shoot 16 times and hit eight of them. Those are the moments to me, and I think should be for everybody else, that like when those happen, you're doing the Leonardo DiCaprio, like, cigarette and beer, like, that's it. And that was, to me, like, that was one of the moments last night watching it. I do think we need to highlight something else, and it's scoot adjacent. Hell, you could take the what is real to you and what's not real to you thing, too, and scoot here. I want to commend Chauncey on this, because I think Chauncey, given everything thrown at him this year with the injuries and the youth and the kind of the rebuilding on the fly veteran young guy thing, man, they're 6-16. So we're not talking about record here. But when you say intensity, when you say Tomani playing heavy minutes, you're talking about running Jabari occasionally at the five when you're down, when you're talking about saying, Scoot, you're a starter, and then saying, nah, Scoot, you're going to come off the bench. Like, when you're handling all of that, I think given everything, he's impressed me. He has. Like, I haven't been the biggest Chauncey guy. The record is obviously not great.
It is what it is because of circumstances.
I'm seeing a team give a damn, try, fight back, and I like how he's kind of handling Scoot. Like, yeah, making adjustments. You've mentioned it before. All the actions they do try, even though people think every possession's ISO, because it kind of boils down at the end of a shot clock. Go get a shot. Oh, crap.
Because
okay.
Four other things didn't work, because it's like it's a little rough because guys have been in and out of the lineup. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Hell, and defensively, they've kind of scrapped the zone a lot. They've junked it up a little bit every now and then. But for the most part, they're man-to-man principles. And even some of the times when they go into zone, they have some pretty strong man-to-man principles within their zone. So sometimes it kind of hides it. But like, you see them making changes. Like, we were doing the watch party last night, and shout out one of the guys who got me to lose my mind and tear my headset off, because he wanted to argue with me over things that the Blazers were and weren't doing. And I mentioned something like, they're running a coverage for X or Y. And he's like, well, that's crazy. I'm like, no, they're doing what worked in the first half. They aren't going to change until the Clippers change. That's what Ty Lue is, the Clippers. That's what everybody loves about Ty Lue, is like, he does this thing, like, he'll do something different until you beat it, and then he'll change it. So they were running drop with Moses Brown in the first half, and they didn't attack Moses Brown in pick and rolls. Well, in the second half, they've got Moses Brown running drop, and Kawhi Leonard's like hitting like 18-foot, 14-foot pull-up mid-rangers. Look,
yeah,
that's a Kawhi Leonard shot. But you don't want Kawhi getting to the rim or getting deep into the paint, collapsing your defense, and spraying out to three. Like, if the thing you're going to give up is Kawhi Leonard lightly contested mid-range pull-ups, so be it. But what changed was James Harden started running pick and rolls with Zubac and pulling Moses Brown up higher. And then guess what happened? The next stoppage, bloop, Duop Reith, right back in at center. Like, but like, they make you break them before they change. Now, they'll throw a junk defense in there out of a timeout just to kind of switch some things up. But for the most part, they're going to have a relatively simple defensive game plan. But they're going to make you break things before they change anything. Because they can't necessarily dictate a ton. But what they can do is they can have a strong foundation on their principles. And then you can kind of adjust from there. Like, those are the things that I've noticed.
Are those new to you? Is that new to you, though? I mean, you're saying Ty Lue. He was obviously on the bench with Ty Lue for a season in L.A. before coming to Portland. Mm-hmm. Is that somewhat new? Are you noticing that with him, given he's had some weird teams? He came in with these expectations. His team was, oh, run it back. And then everything gets blown up and started over. But then, like, it doesn't. And then it finally does. And here we are. Is this a new thing that you're noticing with him, that like, he's doing the Ty Lue, I'm going to hit you with it until I see you adjust, and then I'll adjust to your adjustment?
I think there's a pretty steady commitment to that. I think the big thing is like, number one, personnel. I'll beat that horse to death and come back a week later and kick it again.
For sure.
Personnel is the thing that matters the most. You've got size, you've got length, you've got athleticism. You can do more things and commit more resources to that end. But to say that Chauncey hasn't learned anything in 3 years is it's naive. As much as we talk about, like, you know, the players have grown, Chauncey's growing too. Like, again, is he the best coach in the NBA? No. No. That's Eric Spoelstra's mantle. Nobody's taking that from him. But is Chauncey learning, and are we seeing a team compete and play the, like, the, remember when he said he wanted to see this team be a team that teams don't like to play?
Yes.
They're that team right now.
They're finally the team. Because, I mean, can I add one real quick caveat to it? And by the way, I'm not suggesting he can't learn. I'm merely saying, like, it feels like he has, though, in year three, when you're talking about doing things like, I'm just going to keep hitting you with this until I see you stop it. I noted the Golden State game and last night's game. Obviously, Ty Lue's his guy. But Steve Kerr is not somebody he coached with. I feel like when you watch these end-of-the-game things, especially these games where they either come back and make it tight or they compete the whole way through, I feel like, Danny, you're seeing coaches basically dap him up and say, your team's not fun to play.
That's actually happened at least a half dozen times.
It has to be more than that, given all – because I'm watching specifically for this at the end of the game.
A lot of, Jesus, man.
I know.
Yes. Yes. No, that's happened a lot of, like, that's a tough – it's a tough little team you got there. Like,
they're not the Wizards. You know what I mean?
Yes. Like, they're not the Wizards. They're not the Pistons. They're not the Spurs. Like, remember, when we talked about this, like, what version of this team? Like, they'll probably be the fourth worst team in the league. Like, we kept saying, the Pistons and the Wizards, they're going to be bad. And it's like, it's...
they'll be right around there at the end of the year. They just will. I know other people have thoughts, but like, we know where this
different.
Is probably going to go.
Like, and the other thing is, shout out the Warriors. We love those Warriors. That draft pick's looking better and better for Portland each week.
Hey, it did. What did they end up? I forgot to bring this up to you and text it to you. I'm surprised the Warriors hurt Gary Payton II with all of their poor medical staff.
Right? Like, yeah. No, they didn't shoot him up a tour at all either.
Crazy. That's weird.
Yeah, I've had more than a few group chats who were like, "Hate to see it."
Yeah, really bummed. Go Beavs.
Hate to see that happen to a top-notch organization.
But yeah, I mean, that was it for me. I mean, I think I've enjoyed it. It's they've had some games where you're just rolling your eyes and you're like, oh, I hate this. But for the most part, like, I know when they play Utah on Thursday, they're gonna give them hell if not win the game outright, because Utah sucks. So Ant going off.
Yeah,
he's having a great
and
game.
I have a reeling suspicion that they're going to be healthier then, although...
Brogdon's probably playing, right?
I have little to no reason to suspect that he won't, because I haven't been told anything about him being remotely serious. I did talk to JG before the last game.
Yeah.
To be blunt, my guy's going through it right now.
Dude, concussions, it's crazy that football players play with
those. It's his
fourth.
Oh. It's JG's fourth.
Like, that's a controversial number.
Like, I tend to worry about, like, when he took that shot, like, if you watch the playback from that game from me doing the watch party, you will see me jump and say a lot that I won't say on the podcast. Like, I was genuinely scared for him. He'll be back, but when I talked to him, he had his hood up. He's still fighting it a little bit, and that's why he didn't make the trip to LA. Maybe Thursday. But
DA?
DA, it's a little harder to tell. Like, he's 7 foot, so every time you hear lower body, you're like, take your time.
Yeah, you gotta be
Time.
don't risk it.
Don't risk it, especially here, because I don't want to hear about how Blazers big men legs are cursed. Take your time. They don't need you this season. Please don't do this. But we'll see what comes out of that. And then, like I said, with Brog, Brog's just the kind of guy you got to manage. He just gets banged up.
Knee soreness always worries me. I know it's precautionary stuff, but it always worries me.
That's just him. Like, if you just go look at his career, it's like Knox.
I hear you.
Like, just
stuff
just happens to some guys. Some guys' bodies just aren't meant to play 82.
Yeah.
You know, I'd argue, in fact, most guys aren't meant to play 82. It's the freaks like Dame who played, you know, 82 for seven straight years, or Wes Matthews before his Achilles goes.
Dude, I'm old enough to watch LeBron and go, I'm hurting watching him. I don't know how he's doing this.
Brother, that man is 3 months younger than me.
Isn't that crazy? Holy shit, you are old.
Shout out Ricky out at Palomar. He said he's like, oh my God, I'm old. I'm older than Malcolm Brogdon. I replied to his tweet with, I enlisted in the Air Force before Scoot was born. Yeah. So if you want to feel old, I've had the same surgery that Ant had on his thumb. And Shea had obviously the same, he had the wrap on his thumb when we were talking about it before a game. I was like, yeah, no, I had the same kind of thing. And I can take and like dislocate that thumb now. Like it has like a, you don't know if that pop came through on the mic. I can take and like literally pull it and put it in a weird place and then like reset it. And he was like, oh my God. And I kind of started showing him like a couple different injuries. And he was like the look on his face was disgusted. And Ryan's locker is right next to his. And I was kind of listing all amount. He was looking at his phone. He just slowly looked up at me like, are you kidding me? Like, as I started going down the list of things, and then I looked at both of them, I'm like, and every single one of them happened before either of you were born.
you've got to be a topic of conversation in that locker.
Oh no, it's not, like it's it's come up. Like it's
when you're not there.
When I'm there, it's come up.
Right, but when you're
I know it's come up when I'm not there. Are you kidding me?
Like that guy is. I don't know how he's still alive. It sounds like he's dead, but he's still here.
Nas used to joke about it all the time. Like it was just like, because you know he saw me go through the multiple hip surgeries. And he was like, "What are you doing here? Like you lunatic! You just had her surgery like 6 weeks ago. Why are you in here?" But I say all that because it was just it's interesting to kind of see where these guys are and just how young they really are.
Yeah, like,
they are so young, dude, and they have so much in front of them. And yes, the chat's going crazy right now. Draymond Green is going to get suspended.
What happened? I'm not watching.
He just run blocked Bradley Beal.
Oh, Beal came back tonight too.
Yeah. Like my entire timeline right now on Twitter is suspended.
Dude, if he's not suspended for like, I mean, what was the last one? 8 games or some joke?
Yeah, that's...
Let's see if it's on. Oh, I can't wait to get that first round.
And this is after he spun and he punched Yusuf Nurkic.
Oh,
he punched Dirk in the head.
Oh,
that's intentional.
Dude, he's got to be, bro. You got to sit this ass clown. Out
that's 25 games with his
background.
Get out of here. No,
he should be out for the year. This is ridiculous, dude. I'm tired of this guy.
Yeah, that's intentional.
That is insane. That's the least.
That's a sucker punch.
That's absolutely a sucker punch. He's going to try to play that off. Oh, he was spinning. He was holding me. Like, get out of here, dude.
Unbelievable. All right. It's a good place to end it.
All right.
Draymond Green being a dirtbag. Thank you guys for being here. We will be back on schedule doing at least 2 of these a week, if not more. I'm feeling a lot better. I'm still struggling. But, hey, that's what drugs are for. Shout out Big Pharma.
Well, it's a weird shout out, but sure.
Look, man, it allows me to do what I can do now.
I feel that.
It is what it is. Hey, the great part about this is Draymond getting shut down will definitely help the Blazers lottery pick odds. So,
what is it, top four protected, right?
Top four. Yeah, they're not going to be that bad.
Well, you got to hope ping pong balls. You know what I mean?
Fifth would be good. Fifth? I like fifth.
Fifth would be great. Hello.
Like fifth. Two top five picks.
How about number 2 and 5?
I would say 2 and 5. Mm-hmm. 2 and 5 together. Great. Mm-hmm. All right. Like, rate, review, subscribe. Help us grow the show. Totally forgot my tags there. I was like, what are they again? You can find us on social media at Danny Marang, at Brandon Sprague, at Jack Ramsey's. Do the show more often. You won't forget these things, jackass. Email the show, jackramseys@gmail.com. And as always, you can catch Brandon every morning, 6 to 9 a.m. on 1080 The Fan with his co-host.
Have a stroke tomorrow, 7:30.
Hey, you got the Haber Show coming in.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, Brandon will take like 3 weeks off for the month of December.
Yeah, easy. It's 11 days. Okay, it's 11 days. It's not 3 weeks.
It's not a full Isaac Rob.
You used to call that an Isaac and Souk, man. Yeah, the whole month of December used to be their thing.
Hum, babe. Love them on schedules. It's great if you can find them. Be in radio for 20 years, and that's what happens. You can find me, of course, noon to 3 on Danny and Dusty, also on 1080 The Fan. Like, rate, view, subscribe. Also, find us on YouTube on 1080 AM The Fan. Help us grow the channel there. You can come hang out with us during the show. The shows, during Brandon's show, during my show, and during Isaac and Souk. YouTube Live, the streams are up and running. You can interact and talk to us throughout our shows. Other than that, I'm going to go laugh at Draymond Green and find out just how long people think he's going to be gone. So, everybody have a wonderful night. Take care. Talk soon. Bye.